This is Jan Swift, and you're listening to Discover Lafayette, a podcast dedicated to the people and rich culture of Lafayette, the gateway to South Louisiana. We record in the offices of Raider Solutions, a technology company that offers a complete fleet of IT solutions for businesses of all sizes. Raider's motto is, "You just want it to work, we understand." If you're wondering if Raider can help your business, please visit RaiderSolutions.com. I'd like to thank Iberia Bank for its support. Founded in 1887, Iberia Bank is the largest bank based in Louisiana, headquartered in Lafayette, with 329 combined locations throughout the South. They offer the resources of a national bank with the personal touch of a community bank. Visit IberiaBank.com for more information. And lastly, I want to express my gratitude for Lafayette General Health. As Acadiana's largest nonprofit, community-owned regional health system, Lafayette General Health is committed to restoring, maintaining, and improving health in the communities it serves. For more information, visit LafayetteGeneral.com. Moon Griffon, radio talk show host, is our guest today. Since August 23, 1993, when he launched The Moon Griffon Show in Monroe at KMLB 540 AM, Moon has grown his program to achieve a statewide audience. He's broadcast his show from KPEL 96.5 here in Lafayette since 2014. Besides his Monroe and Lafayette outlets, Moon broadcasts from stations in Alexandria, Baton Rouge, Lake Charles, Natchitoches, Shreveport, Thibodaux, and Winfield, Louisiana, and also Natchez, Mississippi. He also started broadcasting out of Slidell in 2008. Right. So Moon, I've been waiting for this show. Discover Lafayette.
Great to be here. Appreciate you putting up with me.
Oh my gosh. I'm not putting up with you. I'm fascinated with your story because of my own experience trying to grow Discover Lafayette. I've been doing this now over 2 years, and I've learned firsthand you can have an idea, but actually bringing it to fruition and then building it and sustaining it
is not tough. It's
not for the weak-hearted.
Well, you know, but you got to grow it as a business.
And, right.
Mine was a business, too, and it still is a business. People don't understand. I'm not just on the air. Nobody's ever paid me a check. I've not received a check from a radio station yet. So growing your own business is like growing any other business. It takes time, hard work, money, sweat, doubts, fear, trying stuff that work, trying stuff that don't work. I think that's all the natural process. You know, in this day and time, you know, Jan, young millennials think, I want it today, I get it today. They got everything about a hand, a computer, and order something, it's there the next day. And you and me didn't grow up that way.
No.
It kind of takes time to build.
Right.
Nobody wants to take the time. Success in anything takes time.
Right.
And I don't think I've made it to where I want to make it, but I've had a good run.
I think you're doing pretty well.
I had a good run, and it's been a lot of fun. And I hope, you know, being 58, I hope I got 10 or 12 more years in me.
At least.
Means I got my health.
Exactly.
If I got my health, I got everything.
Exactly.
So I'm hoping I can still hang around a little longer.
Yeah. Well, if we can go back to your early days, I have family from Plaquemine, Louisiana.
Oh, yeah.
I know that's where you grew up.
Sure.
And you ended up at Redemptorist High School.
Correct.
Off Plank Road in Baton Rouge and played basketball there.
That's correct. I went there and my last 2 years. Just had a situation. My parents decided to move me and my little brother. My little brother actually went back to Plaquemine. I got three brothers and two sisters.
Okay.
Two graduated from Plaquemine High, two from St. John. I stayed at Redemptorist for 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
And then I graduated and went to Northeast Louisiana University. And here's the funny thing about this. I did graduate in marketing from Northeast Louisiana University. But here's my problem convincing you that I'm educated, besides the way I talk. The problem I have is there is no Redemptorist no more. The school closed.
I know it. My brother was a graduate also.
Okay, now I went to Northeast Louisiana University. There's no Northeast Louisiana University. It's ULM.
So
I don't have a high school or a college, so people, when I tell them I graduated, they go, where you graduated from? And I tell them, they say, never heard of them.
That's funny. Oh, my gosh. That's so funny.
But put me in Monroe, and I stayed 2 years in Baton Rouge, which probably was about as good of memories as I've ever had. It was short and quick. As you know, life goes by fast.
Yeah.
But I had some good memories. Not only playing ball, but I met a lot of good people.
What did you play? What position?
I played in high school. I played forward. In college, I was a guard forward. About 6'5".
Recruited? To go
recruited,
up to Monroe.
I had a bad knee injury after my junior year, and most of my dreams fell by the wayside because I really hadn't had opportunities to go play at some big schools without mentioning names. When I hurt my knee the big schools got off me. There were no big school opportunities. There was all JUCO, small schools like Louisiana College and Mississippi College and Belhaven. And the biggest three offers I had was Nichols, ULM, which is Northeast at the time, and then I had one from Arkansas State. Those were the three big schools. Mm-hmm. And I decided, since my brothers and sisters went to Nichols and they partied a lot, I was going up to North Louisiana. Yeah. So that's what I did. I chose it based on, you know what, let me get away. Let me go.
That's a great school. Yeah.
Oh, no, I enjoyed my 35 years of being up there, and I got a lot of good friends up there still.
So you were in marketing, and then, did I read this right, were you in catering?
Yeah, what
sales?
I did was I got out of school, I started in sales. Mm-hmm. And a few years later, it led to me in a catering business, of all things. I used to love to cook. My daddy, my mom, all of them can cook real well. And I had a guy had a business, and he needed a partner. And I said, you know what, I'll do it part-time. So I had a sales business and that. And I really built that up. Then the radio program came along. And once I decided that I was doing both of them, I decided weekend holidays and night times were no fun. But the radio business seemed to be a little bit more to my personality. And now I got weekends, holidays, and night times off.
Right.
So it made it a little bit better. And so I decided to go that field instead of the catering business.
Let's flesh that out, though. The radio show didn't just come along. You came up with the radio show.
No, what happened was, it was funny. I had been in catering business and did some catering for a radio station. And really, I came through a tough time. People don't understand, I came through a divorce. I came through bankruptcy. I mean, in my 20s, I had some tough times. Mm-hmm. And when I was billing myself back from that, I had went to work with somebody. And I started following talk radio and politics. I don't know why. I just started following it. And one day I was at a restaurant. A guy approached me about helping him in his business. He had a restaurant business. Well, he knew my background was catering. Even though I wanted to get out of it, I said, I'll work if you pay me this. Mm-hmm. Be dang, he told me he'd pay me. I didn't want to take it, but I put it away.
How did you turn that down?
No, yeah. I said, I'll tell you what I'll do. I'll guarantee you 1 year, because I just felt like I was going to do something else. During that process, one of the sales ladies that I got to know came in, and we started just talking. And really, I asked her, what does it cost to get on the air? She said, are you interested? I said, no, but I'm curious. Mm-hmm. And I thought, why can't somebody just with common sense, an everyday guy, middle class, trying to rebuild his life, why couldn't somebody like that get on there and talk for the working middle class people? Mm-hmm. And that was my dream. And all of a sudden it happened. To be honest with you, nobody put me on the radio. They made me pay for my time.
Exactly. Yeah.
Nobody said, oh, by the way, you want to sign a big contract?
No, it's more like it's so much per half hour.
It was
per
so
hour.
Much per hour.
Yeah.
And so I had to figure out how I was going to pay for that. Mm-hmm. And they only guaranteed me 4 weeks. This started off as a one-hour program for 4 weeks. That was it.
Just to see how you panned out.
Just to see. Uh-huh. And they were concerned that I was trying to maybe run for office or something. Well, I don't want to run for office. It's never been a goal, and I still don't have that as a goal. And that's kind of how I got started. It was almost kind of flukish in a way. The lady went back to the general manager, who I knew, and said, Moon's interested in doing a radio program. And so what they did, they came back and said, okay, you got to put in writing what the program would be about. This is how tight they were. They really didn't know what the heck where I was going. Neither did I.
Right.
And so they said, you need to put in writing. You can't make any money.
What?
No money. I would pay for the program. check this out. I did it all the hard way. I can tell you the whole story. So I paid for it. I can't make any money. Mm-hmm. They would do the billing. Who are my advertisers and what I was going to talk about? So I had two little boys at the time. And you know those spiral notebooks?
Yeah.
Well, I wrote it. I just hand wrote everything.
Right. I need to make this much, this many
advertisers. I told them everything they wanted to write, I put it in writing, okay? And I signed it and dated it. But what happened is in spiral notebooks. So Peggy Sullivan's the young lady's name. So Peggy comes back to get, quote, the agreement. So I had put it in a spiral notebook. Well, she got there, I went whoosh, and handed it to her. Well, guess what? The little bitty things are falling off, and she grabs it. She goes, you want me to give this to Bob just like this? Well, I'm nervous now. I'm going, you know what? Do I really want to do this? Or am I just making this up? I said, give it to him just like that. She said, you serious? I said, yeah, if it's meant to be, it's meant to be. If it's not, I'm not going to worry about it. Mm-hmm. And I kind of blew it off. I put me on a program. And a few days went by, and she calls me on a Friday and says, look, Bob agreed to let you do 4 programs. And so they wanted me to start Monday. I said, no. How about the following Monday? Well, I'm scared now. Now I got the deal.
Right.
So I was able to, because of my catering business and because of my basketball at ULM at Northeast.
You had some good
time,
contacts, huh?
You know everybody.
Yeah.
And my personality, if you knew me outside of radio, is really a fun-loving, like to have fun, like people. Mm-hmm. It's not go ruffle up the politicians like people think I do. I just not. I was in the catering business, you're well-liked. It's better if you do a good job.
Right.
And so I was able to pick up the phone and call 4 people. I don't remember what the fee was. It might have been $150 for the hour, mm-hmm. whatever it was at the time. I picked up 4 people. I told them I'd advertise you for 4 days. And every one of them said, yeah, I'll do that for you. And they all put up money for me to do 4 programs. And that's how I got started in the business.
What did you focus on in 1993?
What I focused on a lot back then was my motto has been God, family, country. Mm-hmm. And I focused on the First and Second Amendment. It was okay. Easy. It was low-hanging fruit.
Right.
It was all the information
everybody
in the world
agreed.
You could find out.
Yeah.
I knew enough about it to talk about it. And I also knew a lot more because what I really believe in doing is research. And I'm mm-hmm. still doing the same research I did
right.
back then. I read a lot. I've made contacts. And so you get on the air and you start talking about things that you understand and that you can talk about. And I noticed you had to be pretty passionate, and I'm kind of a passionate guy. And I noticed through the 26 years that you got to kind of be driven.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, your personality driven is who you are.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody can't do what I can do. Of course, I can't do what this gentleman does and probably can't do what you do. But I noticed real quick, I learned pretty quick by failing. I failed a lot in this thing. People don't realize I have fallen, tripped over myself so many times in this business.
In the early days?
Huh?
In the early days?
What do you mean in the early days? Today?
Still? Well, I mean, you're here 26 years later.
I know, but it don't matter. I know, but you're still not tripping somewhat. But no, it's been a trial and error. Mm-hmm. The problem with me is, and there's a lot of problems with me, but the biggest problem with me is I never went and get a mentor. I hadn't followed anybody. Oh, I like Rush Limbaugh. I follow Rush. Rush is the best, but I never met him. I never met Sean. I never been to a talk radio seminar. I never been to a talk radio forum. I never even pick up Talkers Magazine. I still don't. I just figured if it was meant to be, mm-hmm. and I feel like the good Lord put it on my heart, that if I would pursue it, that good things would happen. I didn't realize all the bad things you got to go through to get to the good things. And because here's the deal. When the 4 weeks was up, they wanted me to do 13 weeks. And I did 13 weeks, Jan. And then what happened was they wanted me to do another 13 weeks. Well, another hour came open. I was 2:06 to 3 o'clock after Rush on Mondays.
Oh, my gosh.
That was it.
That's it?
Now, I want you to think about this. If you really grew in a radio program, doing it every day, you'd get better every day. I was doing it once a week.
But you were moved to prime time, you know, like
Rush. That happened up the road. See, what had happened was...
When did you start? Like, what time slot did they give you?
That's what I'm saying, 2:06 after Rush.
Which from
from the first time.
Okay.
And that was tough because Limbaugh would have high numbers and everybody behind him would tank. Everybody tanked behind him because Sean came along. And so what happened was I started doing it where after 3 or 4 months, I said, look, I'm not doing this for free anymore. I need to be able to make money.
Yeah, yeah.
So what they set me up as an account. So in other words, I still paid for my time.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But what happened was I was now anything above that I could make as profit. So now I understood how the game was played. Okay.
And you had to get your numbers up and get
Well, absolutely. Numbers were always iffy at first. Mm-hmm. And so what I was able to do, there was another hour that came open. And it was a Thursday at 2 o'clock. So now Mondays and Thursdays at 2 o'clock, mm-hmm. I got 2 hours. My cost goes up. But at that time, I was able to sell break even.
Right.
Maybe make $1,000 a month.
And you could still do your job.
Still was doing my daytime job and still could sell because I was working with a guy in a business that I was working every mm-hmm. other day. So I would work Monday, Wednesday, Friday 1 week and Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday. Mm-hmm. But those days that I was off, I would go and work on advertisement. And that's how I kind of was able to build a business. And it kept growing from that point on.
Mm-hmm.
Then I went Monday, Thursday, Saturday morning, 7 to 9. Well, it got tough to sell, too, because if you're a client and I go to you, you go, hey, I listened Wednesday and you weren't there.
Right.
No, I'm on Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday. Now, when are you on again? Well, guess what? An advertiser wants to know when they're running. They mm-hmm. want to hear the program. So And I had a decision to make. Then it was Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday from 7 to 9. I had the hours I wanted, but not the spot I wanted.
Yeah.
So.
Because you need that right audience.
Well, you need the audience. You need the time slot. There's a lot that went on. And once again, this whole process is trial and error.
Right.
It's learning. Every month the bill came due.
Yeah.
I had to check the radio station.
Right.
You know, I've been here. It's not set up like that anymore. That's how it was set up early. But those are the hard times. But, you know, I never, by the grace of God, never missed a payment.
Right.
Not one ever. And I'm not cocky about that. I'm humbled. I'm surprised I didn't miss 20 payments.
Yeah.
Because you just never
knew. I understand that. After what I've seen, I just didn't realize. I guess it's like throwing a party or anything. Until you do it, you don't realize the work that makes it look effortless.
Well, it's, you know, it's
people turn on the radio
and there you
are.
Well, no, but you see the final product. Even what you do, it's the same thing. Mm-hmm. They see the final product. Nobody knows. You got to get people to interview. You got to get them in. I mean, all that stuff. Man, I miss one with you too. I know what happens.
But you know, it worked out well. We were supposed to do this last week as a personal aside, and my daughter ended up in the hospital, and I don't think I had it. The energy. I wanted to have the right energy.
Sure, sure.
And you had it all worked out fine for
both
of us.
About
so,
it. But that's kind of how it got going.
Mm-hmm.
And finally, I figured out something real quick that I needed to be every day at the same time.
Right.
I'm a morning person. My whole family's morning people. I mean, getting up at 3 and 4 o'clock in the morning is nothing for me.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely to the day. That don't mean I'm trying to get up at 3 or 4 in the morning. But I'm saying I can do it. It's not a problem.
Yeah.
So I got to thinking, well, how can I make this work? And I was still catering some and doing this.
Mm-hmm.
And I was able to go full time. I actually walked in. Bob Holliday is my producer. And I went into Bob and I saw Bob. At the time, G. Gordon Liddy was real big.
Yeah.
And we had a great morning program. And it was doing good in the ratings. They were making money. So I walked in one day. I said, Bob, I want to talk to you about going every day. He said, well, what time slot? I said, I want to do like 8 to 10, 9 to 11, something like that. Actually, it was 8 to 10. He said, that ain't going to happen. I said, why not? He said, well, we got a really good morning program tonight, and we got G. Gordon Liddy, and he's doing real well for us. I said, well, look, do me a favor. He said, what? I said, when the time comes open, will you sell it to me? He goes, what do you mean when the time comes open? I said, I feel like this is what the good Lord wants me to do for a while. I said, when the time comes over, will you sell it to me? He said, absolutely. So I went back to work, didn't talk to him again. About 2 months later, he calls me in. Now, remember, Bob's a business guy. And the money for making it on 2 or 3 hours versus every day in the morning, his money's getting ready to double. He calls me back in. He said, man, it's funny you asked about this a couple months ago. He said, but we're going to make a change. And he said, you interested in going every morning? I said, absolutely. He said, 8 to 9. Not 2 hours, 1 hour.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I had another little sideline because I was in the catering business. And actually, I worked for Bob for a few years. So I was kind of playing. Like, once again, I came through a tough time. I'm trying to rebuild my life. And I bought 8 to 9, and I kept my Saturday program.
Mm-hmm.
Well, after doing this for 2 or 3 months, now I'm doing work. I'm in this 7 days a week. Now, I got to tell y'all, I don't follow politics 7 days a week right now. That's not what I do. People don't understand that. That's right. Not who I am. So I go back in the office 2 months later. I said, I need 2 hours. He said, dude, that ain't going to happen. He told me just like that. I said, well, I heard this before.
I know.
I said, would you do me a favor? He said, what? I said, when it comes open.
Mm-hmm. Let me know.
Will you sell it to me?
Yeah.
He said, when it comes open. I've heard this before. 2 weeks later. He called me back in.
He pencil whipped the numbers, huh?
He put the numbers in. So he was looking at what he was making off of me. And I was paying way more money than I probably should have paid. And he just said, I do 2 hours for this. But I had to negotiate him down a bit. I said, because
you got to live.
You got to live, and I got to make money. But when I did that and I made that move, that's when I decided just to do that. I got away from catering,
mm-hmm.
a little bit I was still doing. And I decided I'm going to make this happen. Well, this was January, and I don't remember the year, but January, February, I didn't make too much money. I tell you what I did. I made $800 the first month,
God.
And I made about $1,000 the second
and
month.
And all the Christmas bills coming in.
But I was
in.
Still catering. Nah, cash Christmas, I was okay. And actually, I was divorced. So I was single.
Yeah.
So I was able to maneuver everything around. Heaven knows I was divorced for a year. Heaven knows I met my bride that January, and we got married 6 months later, and we've been married 24 years.
So that was a good
So all that stuff was in the mix of this, and I'm making no money, and I'm just doing this now. And I literally got on my knees and said, you know, Lord, either I made a bad decision and need to go get a job, or I made the right decision, but this next month or two is going to tell me if I made the right decision. And the next month, I made $2,500 in a month.
Oh, my gosh.
And the next month, I made about $3,000 in a month. And then it kind of hit me. This is going to be hard, but I can do this.
And you liked it.
And I liked it.
Yeah.
So what I did was we went from 8 to 10. Mm-hmm. I dropped the Saturday program. Mm-hmm. And we stayed there for a while. And I was able, as a drive time, to build my numbers up and build the program up. And that's kind of how it got started, Jan. It was all hard, though. None of that was easy.
Right.
Every bit of it was struggled with every dollar. Every time I was on the air, then people started not liking you because you're talking about stuff. Mm-hmm. And I decided that wouldn't bother me as long as I felt I was right and I was doing the right thing. If I ever feel like I'm wrong, I'm going to apologize. Tell somebody I'm sorry in a second.
Right. Were you still focused on national
issues?
Well,
no. What I did at that time, because I was local, I focused on local.
Local politics.
I was into the police jury and the city council and the mayor and the chamber.
I bet there was a lot to talk about.
It was, well, you had to grow an audience. Now, did we talk state and national? Yes, ma'am, we did. That's what's great about doing what you do. I can't really talk local as much anymore. It's got to be state or national. When it, back in the day, you could talk about anything because it affected
commerce.
You got to understand something with the chamber.
Boy.
This will get you in trouble. I would never recommend going after the chamber.
There, you know?
Oh, it was bankers and friends and everything else. But this is what tied me with the chamber.
Sorry.
Just real quick, it's funny, but I'm not messing with any more chambers. The chamber was led by Mike Neal. I knew Mike.
Mm-hmm.
But Mike started making everybody political. He went to the Monroe City Council and got them to spend $75,000 a year with them to lobby. Then he went to the police jury and got them to give $100,000 to lobby. Well, let me ask you a question. Who's the Monroe Chamber of Commerce going to lobby for? Lafayette? Lake Charles? No. And it wouldn't be done anywhere in the state or the country.
Hmm.
He had made it political. So guess what? Every time they come up with a tax increase, chamber was going to support them. And so I thought, wow, this is so hard. I challenged them, and some people got really upset.
I'm curious.
I got some chamber people hot.
I mean, if you were anything like you are today, I know that you're not
much
shy.
Different, a little bit more fiery.
There's nothing shy about you. Did you come up like that? Were you always someone that would come back with a retort?
God, I wish you wouldn't ask me that.
You know
it's
saying?
Funny you said
I've
that.
I've always been so quiet, and I wondered if you were
our whole family's nothing but personality.
So the kid in the back, just giving the teacher
From a daddy. I didn't try to do teachers. I needed them. But what my brother used to say, I have a brother that's 14 months younger. Now, we were the closest, of course. And when I got in this business, he said, I used to go home and tell Mama, Moon argues with everybody. He can't get away from arguing with somebody. He said, this is perfect job for you with practicing since you've been six. And I didn't, it never entered my mind.
Isn't that something?
No, because my personality was driven that, and I'm still like that.
Mm-hmm.
If I think I'm right, or believe I'm right, I'll fight you to the death.
Yeah.
If I'm wrong, I'll apologize to you quick and tell you I'm sorry. And I've had to apologize on my program before, Jan. Don't think I haven't. I have, and more than once. Because I'm not always right, and I'm not perfect, but I tell people, I'm not an expert in anything. I'm not an expert in anything, and I'm telling you up front I'm not.
Do you do your own research? This morning I listened to your show.
Sure.
I'm not always able to listen just because of the timing, but I listened to the whole show, and you were, you know, one of your guests, you were able to rebuke, like you were able to tell him. He would say something, you'd say, no, sir, this is what you said. Do you do all your research? Do you
all
have staff?
It.
Like you don't have somebody that... You
the only person, let me back up to be fair. Brandon Como is my producer.
Yeah, yeah.
Brandon will look stuff on the internet in a second for me if I ask.
So while you're talking.
If I'm talking, Brandon may pop something in there and send it right to me.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Because it's technical. What's your
Well, the late CB for Gossin, I've seen that on your sheet.
I loved CB.
CB was gold to me, and CB is not here no more. He's been gone 3.5 years, and I kind of wonder what would happen to my program because what happened with CB became such a wealth of knowledge.
He just had it.
Well, he helped write the Constitution. Mm-hmm. He was in the legislature as a lawyer.
Right.
They begged him to stay to handle the finance. He said, no, I'm out of here. there. And he didn't like what they did. And he just turned back on them. And he taught me a lot about looking up information.
How to look at the budget.
Yes, absolutely.
Because no one really understands.
And be honest with you, there's parts I don't either. And so what I did, I've had to befriend some elected officials to get some information from them. And just to be blunt with you, I've had to go in different directions to get information. Yeah. But I do all my own stuff. And that way, if it's wrong, it's on me. I don't say, Jan, send me information. Mm-hmm. Go, my lady messed up. Nope.
Right.
It's going to be on me. So anything that comes out of mouth that's wrong, if it's wrong, it's on me. But there's a difference between me and a lot of elected officials. They want to be known as never lying, always being right. And that's a bunch of bunk. I'm telling you up front, when I'm wrong, I got to apologize. When I'm wrong, I'm going to say it. You may go, well, listen to you. I don't hear that much. I've had to apologize many times because I'm not always right. And my opinions are not always right and perfect. They're not. But I know this, when I look at the way the state's going, why do we want to stay last? That's what I will never understand about people. You can't, you keep doing the same thing and expecting different results. That's called insanity. And we do the same thing over and over and over and again.
I was lucky. I mentioned this to you before we started taping. I had a great job when I was in law school. I got to work two summers as a Senate aide. We were paid 7 days a week, whether or not the Senate was in. And you know the Senate works a lot less than the House.
But they got to wait on the House so much with tax bills especially.
Now, the end of the session, it's crazy because you got to catch up. But I had this great job, and I didn't get to know the House of Representatives guys as well until I lobbied later. But the same people that are in office today, many of them that are leaders, were leaders in 1981. And here it is 38 years later. And we're seeing the same people. And I'm not saying they're dishonest, but we have gone nowhere but backwards. And the thing was, during those days, oil and gas, we had, it was a heyday. So there was a lot of money. And Edwin Edwards knew how to, he knew how to lead. I mean, he was able to.
Oh, you can say what you want about Edwards. Now, I'm one of the guys that didn't like him. I'll never like him. But Edwards did lead.
He did.
I will say that right now, what you got is a bunch of people that are not leaders. They're deal makers. Deal makers never get you where you need to get. Leaders do. And I think we got too many deal makers. I just think that we're still living in Huey Long. And we still got the statue. We still got the statue in front to prove it.
But you know, that's us. Like, we're the people that are electing.
I know, but we're losing so many good young people. And it's not just young people. People that have retired are moving over there to chase the kids. You're losing people in their 40s and 50s now. You're losing childbearing people. You're losing them because they're looking for jobs. And that's not the focus here. The focus is always, how much can we get out of the taxpayer and put in the government? And I'm very frustrated by it in a way. And at times, I just don't worry about it. I'm not going anywhere.
I know. I hear about this, and you know, my husband and I are both attorneys, and we've been able to do all right. The oil and gas industry, though, like I was doing the Love Our Schools. Yeah. We were stuffing backpacks a couple weeks ago, and I met this really nice woman, a little bit younger than me, in her late 50s. And she was talking about her husband cannot get work here. He's still an active oil and gas guy, but everybody in Texas, I mean, she's like, our son says, he's already moved to Dallas. Our son says we should move to Dallas, and they don't want to. They love it
here. No, I'll tell you what, the culture in Lafayette, I mean, we moved here. Mike Grimsley told me, he said, you're ready for your life to change.
It's
and
great.
It has. It's been great for us.
Yeah.
But I left another area that's just a poor area.
It is.
And I love Monroe. Love the people there. And I was there yesterday, and I talked to a buddy of mine who's in the construction business. He said, man, it's tough. He said, we finally got a little bit of work. Holding my breath, hoping they'll stay with us a little while. He said, boy, last year was tough. I hear that everywhere. Well, we don't focus on that. We just don't. And I would go look around the country. You can go to Texas, but you can go to other states and find out what they're doing different. And they're allowing their businesses to grow. Mm-hmm. They're encouraging their business to grow. Well, taxing people to prosperity has never worked.
Yeah,
I think we're making it easier to be poor here than it is to be wealthy. And when I say wealthy, I'm not talking about multi-millionaire being. I'm just talking about somebody that's put money back, able to retire one day.
Self-sufficient.
Yeah, self-sufficient. That's really when I think of wealth, I think that's a pretty wealthy person.
Right. When did you start, I guess, transitioning from your first Second Amendment talks? I'm sure they were heated, too.
They were.
When did you kind of transition to more of the guys?
I guess I figured out pretty quick that you know, people like to talk about what's happening in their community. And I was only Monroe, Washita Parish. And I found out real quick with things going on in the area, when you started talking about that, people really got involved. Yes, they got called in. They were more involved. And I remember one time they were trying to sell a hospital in Washtenaw Parish, and it was paid for by the people, but they were trying to sell it to another entity. And I'm talking about a world war broke out. Well, I was in the middle of it, but I wasn't in the middle of it on the wrong side. I was middle of it on the right side. And everybody must have turned into my program for those months. I mean, because it went 6-7 months. This was on. And then you notice all these people now know who you are. Yeah. But a lot of them knew who I was from catering and basketball. But now they always, now you're developing into something. At first you weren't.
And you're a habit.
Yeah, they're thinking you fry French fries for a living. Mm-hmm. But as you develop and you're picking up people who never knew who you were, there's so many people that don't know who you are. Then they know who you are. Trust me.
Oh, yeah.
And I saw today the governor's poll, 88% know who he is. He's been the governor for 4 years. How can you not know who the governor is? Only 88%. I thought that was low. I thought it should have been 100. But then you start picking up people and people getting involved. And I noticed that. I said, you know, probably be better off to talk about what's happening now than what happened back when the Constitution came up.
Right.
Although I still think that stuff's important. That's what kind of drove me. Remember I told you it was always changing?
Yeah.
That's what drove me to start concentrating on things that mattered in people's lives today. Mm-hmm. The Constitution matters in our lives. But to somebody not being able to pay pay for their food, or they were in poverty, or somebody had a job and lost it, that was real issues. Or how were we being affected by government and their policies? And I started concentrating on this, the national media. I started looking at the national stuff. Then I started looking at the state stuff. And I just started finding, I'm reading and learning and talking to people. And that's how it grew. That's what I meant by learning pains and growing pains. When I first started, did I know where I was going? Nope. I had a vision of what I wanted to do. I'm still not there yet.
I think your audience knows who the governor is, obviously. So many people are disengaged. I mean, have you seen in the 26 years you've been on air, what are you seeing? Like, people are just, not voting.
Let me give you the proof in that. When Edwin Edwards ran, and we had the Edwards-Duke debacle, and I call it debacle because I was not an Edwin fan, and I sure wasn't a David Duke guy. And Edwards won with a million votes. Mm-hmm. Since Edwin Edwards had a million votes, then Mike Foster came along with two elections. Then it was Blanco, Governor Blanco. And there was 2 years of Bobby Jindal, 2 terms of Bobby Jindal, then a term of Edwards. Every year the vote total to win the election has gotten lower and lower and lower. Edwards, who won in 2015, and Edwards won in 1991, mm-hmm. he won with a million votes. Bel Air was only won with 624,000 votes. Donald Trump got more votes than Edwards and David Vitter got together. He got 1.2 million. That goes to what you said. The number of people that are the apathy, don't care anymore. Some people just moved out the state.
I think they're just disgusted.
But we've lost a lot of people.
We've lost a lot of people.
And we lost a lot of the people that I call middle to upper income. And what I mean by middle class working people that left for jobs, mm-hmm. they felt like they had to leave. Those are your best and brightest and people that have become educated, not just college, but through high school. And I see it. When I saw those numbers, I thought, wow, we had 38-39% vote in the governor's race last time. Some of them were disgusted. They didn't want to vote for Vitter. I understand that. Some didn't want to vote for a Democrat. But, I mean, you didn't have 1.2 million people voted. I mean, that's nothing out of 2.9 million registered voters.
Right.
So your apathy's there. Jan, you hit it on the head. I mean, people just either they don't care or they had enough. Sad thing about it is I had enough is the ones that bothered me because they're leaving. So that means if you lose them on the voting, you're going to lose them as citizens. They're your childbearing people. There's the people that start businesses, the entrepreneur types that come up with ideas. Like, you know, we're sitting here at Chris Rader, but Chris had to come up with this, unless this young man over here did. Somebody had to come up with this idea of what he's doing. Mm-hmm. Well, a lot of these young people are like this. Now, Chris's not young anymore, but they're starting these ideas in
Texas.
You
said that. I did.
I know. Well, you can tell him I said it, too. But the point being is, think about what I just said.
Yeah.
If Chris Rader would have said, I'm leaving, he could have started this business in Texas and never heard of it.
And his three children get educated there. They stay there. They move on.
They don't come when kids go off to college. They're not coming back for the most part. They better have a job because the key to keep them is the job and businesses. And you in the legislature, you tell me when we really focused on the jobs and the things that we can do to keep people here. We've never. I've been following this since Edwin Edwards to Bel Edwards. And I don't remember many governors. I remember the running the miles about jobs and businesses. nothing ever happened.
Yeah. Well, Romer did that, but then he only lasted one term.
Well, he did one term.
Yeah. You know, for me, though, when I was in school, I'm really dating myself, but government paid for...
39 is not bad. Yeah,
well,
go ahead.
Thank you. Government paid for our tuition, so I didn't have money. I was on Social Security in college, but tuition was really paid for by our government. And when I see where we are now, where it's upside down, things aren't changing. I heard you talking on your show this morning about LSU's already saying they have a 3%
deficit. That really bothered me.
That's because the numbers of students are down.
Well, you know, this is the thing that we're not looking at.
They've got to have enough students enrolled and paying tuition.
We've lost 15 to 20,000 students. I don't remember the number. I had it today.
All the universities.
Well, we lost them in K through 12. Well, if you have less people in K through 12, you're going to have less people in the colleges. So what they're doing with the colleges, I mean, it takes a lot to run them. They're doing dual enrollment. Well, dual enrollment is they only being counted in high school and college so they can get more money coming in. But we're losing them because of jobs. People say, well, how do you correlate that? We're losing people. We're one of only three or four states mm-hmm. that are losing people still. We've been losing people, but we're losing them still. We're the only southern state losing population.
That's amazing. Yeah.
Okay. We're it. We've lost 27,000 people in the last 4 years. 27, they put out a number today, 10,000. It's 27,500. I don't know where they got the 10 from. That's people that have left. That's the net out migration. Counting the people moving in and counting the people that left. That's not a good number.
Right, right.
That's people looking for jobs and looking for opportunities. And we're losing older people, too. People that want to retire here. Mm-hmm. Think about it. I got two kids and they live in Texas. I got four grandbabies.
Where are you going to go, possibly?
What's going to keep them here?
Right.
They leave. And I just don't think we focus on the right things. And look, I'm not trying to be a greedy, selfish businessman. Because I don't think everybody's selfish and greedy as business people. I'm just being reality. If Chris moves his business, these young people don't have a choice. Find a job similar or go with him.
Right.
That's going to be their choice. Right. Now, the way Chris operates, I know he doesn't just operate in Louisiana. So it kind of helps him. Mm-hmm. Just like I don't just operate in Lafayette or New Orleans. So I didn't just operate in Monroe. That's helped me survive.
Right. Well, he could be anywhere with this business.
He could be anywhere.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying he's going to move, but I tell you what, I know he's got young kids. If they all go to college somewhere, he could pick up and move one day.
Right.
It'd be easy for him to.
What do you see with the governor's race? You know, a lot of people I know are okay with Governor Edwards. They've liked the way he handled the flood. He's a family man, pro-life. And you've got the other side of the coin, you know, the economy.
I'll be honest with you, I'm a little prejudiced. I'm probably the worst one to ask, but I'll tell you, I've always said he's a one-term governor. I still believe he is. I think if you look at accomplishments, I don't think he can tell you what he accomplished. Yeah, he's a nice guy. He's mm-hmm. good when they do hurricanes, but if you look at, he's raised a lot of taxes on people and fixed nothing. There's nothing fixed. The budget's not even fixed. Mm-hmm. We'll have a deficit next year. If I'm wrong, you tell her to get me back on the program.
Okay.
You looked at LSU. LSU said we're 3% short. Well, if you look at the commercials, Edward said we fully funded higher ed. Well, which one is it? There's a lot of things to remember. Trump got 58% of the vote. This is a red state. He got 58% last year during the congressional district. 58% of Republican won. David Vitter's not in a race. I personally liked Vitter. I thought he was tough. But Vitter was a problem. You had 150,000 people that voted against David Vitter that vote Republican. You had another 150,000 that did not vote. That's why, remember the 624?
Right.
Okay. 150,000 people that didn't vote. They could not vote for a Democrat. You got people that will come back in the field.
With these two.
Vote for Republican. I'm going to be shocked if Edwards win. See, I'm the one that said I don't see how he wins. If the Trump people go vote, he can't win. How do you vote for that? The economy, I mean, we had a negative GDP his first year, negative GDP his second year, 1.1 growth in 2018. Texas had 3.3. I mean, you start looking at that. I don't see how I admit there are some people out there, but that like his demeanor and all that's all out there. I admit, but I think when it comes down to it, Donald Trump's going to be here, mm-hmm. and I think he's going to be the calling card that gets. I do not think they beat him 58-42.
Right.
But if you look at the Democrats statewide, and go back to Mary Landrieu's campaign, 44 is about a max number that they get in a state.
And this is going to be a high
turnout. I do think he can get a little more than that in a runoff, but I don't think it's more than 46. But if he gets to 48, you still get beat.
Right.
And I think some of the lies are going to catch up. The campaign of saying that he funded TOPS, the governor was the one that presented the cut in TOPS. He said he funded higher ed. We say LSU, that's the flagship. No cut on UL or anybody else. They're the flagship. They're down 3% for the year. That they said all the budget battles were over.
Yeah.
Unemployment's down. You can run on unemployment's down, but my question would be, what did you do to bring it down? Well, two of the things that's happened here is out-migration, and people quit looking for jobs. That will bring unemployment rate down. We're still fifth highest in the country. There's just too many things, I think, that are going to add up when it's said and done. Now, I've been wrong before. People laugh, say, what are you going to do if you're wrong? I said, I'm not going to do a darn thing. I said, you ask what I think. I just think there's too many things that go against him to beat him. Now, the other two candidates, I know both of them. Mr. Ralph Abraham, he's a congressman. Eddie Rispone, he's a personal friend. Redemptorist, alumni, and all that stuff.
Really?
All his family.
He went to Redemptorist?
Him, but a bunch of his family members did. Uh-huh. But he's very familiar with Redemptorist.
Yeah.
Those guys hadn't spent a penny yet.
Right.
Okay, number
he's
two.
He's got it to
number
spend.
Two, you hadn't seen anything negative on Edwards in almost 4 years, with the exception of me. I was the only one that told him, all that's going to change when they start writing and running ads about what's really going on. That hadn't been done in New Orleans. It hadn't been done in Baton Rouge. And so I still think that what I'm telling you will happen. If I'm wrong, I'll be wrong.
Right.
I don't have a problem with that. I've been wrong before. Ask my wife.
Daily, huh? Daily.
I got it right one time.
So one of my daughters wanted me to ask you, who would you like to see up against Trump? Which Democrat do you think would be the dream candidate for him
God
to be against?
Mercy.
Have you thought about that?
Good question.
There's so many. I mean, it's tough to narrow down.
I tell you what, they got some Looney Tunes on that side. I'm sorry. People keep thinking Biden would beat him because he's just so old Joe. But I don't think the Democrats are going to put up an old 70-something-year-old white man. I just don't think they're going to put him up. I think he's looking at Kamala Harris. I can't see Elizabeth Warren being the bearer either. I think it's going to be Kamala Harris. Are they going to grab Obama's wife? I think it's going to be something along that. I do think she's still a player.
Wow.
I do. I really think she's a player.
Yeah, she's
a I think it's going to be somebody like that.
Mm-hmm.
I think Trump will beat either one of those at this point. But, you know, Trump says a lot. And the people that like Trump would like for him to quit saying so much. On the flip side, you get in a corner and let somebody call you a Nazi and a Hitler and racist every day with no proof. That's I say no proof. That's my opinion. And I'll tell you what, I'd fight you too. I'd fight you. And I think what happens is he's decided he's going to be a fighter. He's a ballroom fighter and he's going to fight you. So you got all this stuff that we, quote, never seen, but I've never seen a Republican ever fight him back on these terms. I mean, you can't just holler racism without proving it. By the way, if you heard my program today, I had a guy call. He was a black gentleman call. He was very nice. But he said, you make racial statements. And he said it, and I said, that's not a racial statement. That's your opinion. I said, you can't call me a racist, and it stick. Because of racism, if you think about the real term of racism, is people that think they're superior. We have people like that. We have people that actually do something against somebody, hurt them, keep them from getting a job because of the color of their skin. No, that's racist there. But because you made a comment, that's not racial. That's not racism. And we've reinvented it. And now it's a political term that is out there every day. And I hate it because a guy called my program. I was about to fall out laughing. I said, prove them. Well, you know, then all of a sudden when I tell them to prove it, they spit all over themselves. And that guy was bailing out because all I told him was prove it. If I am, tell me, because I quit my program and go into hiding.
I thought he was brave to call you.
Well, I've been called that before, but
he
they
was
never
talking about how it works in certain communities,
getting
people to the polls. He was talking,
And I'm not saying that. I just made the fact with Democratic Party for many, many years. This is the fact. They put a lot of money on the streets with some pastors, not all, and community organizers to go by and get the black vote out. Mm-hmm. That's been going on for 50, 60 years.
Right.
If that's not racist to say that's going on, you know? If it's not going on, somebody proved me wrong, but nobody's ever proved me wrong.
Nobody called the show to
No, I've sat down with people. Most of the time I get a call from somebody that's in the African-American community and said, hey, I don't like what you say, but you're telling the truth. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I just wish we'd be a little careful with the word. If it's really true that somebody is hurt, mm-hmm. somebody of color, or held somebody back from getting a job, those are racism. That's racist acts. They ought to be called down from. I'll call them down with them. But not, you know, AOC called Nancy Pelosi a racist because she didn't agree with her.
That is an interesting dynamic.
Yeah, think about that. Yeah. They're fighting each other now. And I thought,
that's just
wow.
helping Trump. I know.
I thought, wow, why would you do that? But it shows that when you have nothing else to say, mm-hmm. you go to the lowest level thing. And that was a tough time in our country. I'm not saying it's not out there some, but it's not out there like it used to be. You know, we work at the station. We got whites and blacks. I got some of my best friends are black. I could give you the names of them right now. We go eat. We do things. I mean, that's not who we are. There's a few people out there, but it's both sides.
Right. Glad to hear that.
It's both sides. And it's a shame. It's really a shame because that's a tough word to put on somebody. And they know it. The left knows it, and that's why they use it.
Right. Because it does stick.
It sticks. And guess what? If you're elected official or doing what I'm doing, you don't want that word by you.
Right.
You don't want to be associated. You get scared. But I decide I'm going to fight it back. Somebody's going to call a program, and they've done it over 26 years. They've done it a dozen times. And none of them stood with me. None of them. Some of them would even go back to the point of saying, well, you're not a racist, but I just don't like. Well, just say you don't like the way I do stuff, but don't call me something that I'm not.
Yeah.
Because I don't remember a racist act I've ever done in my life. I mean, if I did, somebody show it to me.
Right.
That's just not how we were brought up. You know, my daddy worked at Dow Chemical. He worked in a plant, shift worker for 35 mm-hmm. years. And he worked back in the integration time. And back in the time when blacks weren't allowed to get jobs, finally blacks were allowed to get jobs just like a white person. It's back in the 60s. And my daddy was working at Dow Chemical, and they came to my daddy and said, Tommy, we're getting ready to start hiring blacks. He said, look, we got to put these two guys under somebody we can trust to treat them fair. And it was my dad.
Oh.
They picked my dad. It's a true story. Mm-hmm. I'm going to give you two stories. And my dad worked those guys. And my daddy would tell you today, if he was living, he's dead. That was two of the best workers and best guys he's ever worked. He loved them. They loved him, became friends. Daddy would grow vegetable gardens, bring them vegetables. Mm-hmm. We had I was in the 60s when the integration really got going. People were getting shot.
Right.
I mean, somebody came up on the back door. Well, my daddy's there. You know, we got guns in the house, still do. And it was a black guy that gotten shot. Daddy helped him through the fence, really. Got him in the house. My mom was a nurse. He had got shot. And mom and him docked him up, stopped the bleeding, did everything for him, put him in the truck, drove him to the emergency room, got him help with the emergency room, and paid the emergency room bill. Now, back then, the emergency room bill might have been $20, but it was all relevant because my daddy wouldn't probably make it but $6,000 a year, if that. And he paid the bill. My daddy helped people. He didn't help you or not help you because you were black or white.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, you see that red blood? We all bleed the same color. He said, we're all red-blooded Americans. And that's how I was taught.
Right.
I played basketball. I played with more blacks than I ever thought to play. I was the only white guy in the gym a lot of time. And never bothered me because we didn't grow up hating anybody. Mm-hmm. And that's how I think most whites look at it. I can't tell you about those segregationists and all that. But I know in our house and people I knew, it just wasn't the way we were brought up.
Right.
And so when I'm called that, yeah, it's offensive. But I just say, you know what? Until you can tell me what I did. Mm-hmm. I'm going to hold my ground. So President Trump, I don't see him as a racist either. I think what happens, though, if you put it on the news every night, every night, every night, every night, and somebody doesn't watch it, they go, oh, that's a racist guy.
Yeah.
Really?
I just laugh.
They can't say what he did.
I know.
They can say what he said because he says too much.
Yeah. I think we just take his phone away.
Yeah, we could just take the phone
midnight.
The Twitter and all that away sometimes. I mean, but everybody, the criticism of him from our side is that, I just wish he would just shut up. Sometimes it don't matter, you know.
Keep your trap shut.
Yeah.
But he's done a lot of good that a lot of people do appreciate. So
I'm just telling you, you can't name a person that you know that if you put them in a corner and you spit on them every day and you throw stuff at them every day, they're not going to turn around and fight you sooner or later. And I think Trump's had to fight his way out of a corner. Mm-hmm. And you can say, well, he put himself in that. No, these people have started on him. The squad members, those people started calling him Hitler and racist. They don't even know him. They just got elected.
Mm-hmm.
So what do you do? Once again, as president, you say you don't do what he does. Well, you know, maybe he believes that maybe I need to because nobody's bailing me out
right.
of this.
Right. It's going to be an interesting race. I'm really looking forward
to it. The presidential, but I don't really care who they put up at this point. They still going for impeachment.
Right.
All that crazy stuff. So, you know, you just don't know what the mood of American people is going to be in a year.
Right.
In politics, 2 weeks, 3 weeks is a long time. Can you imagine a year and a half?
I know.
I mean, you're talking about anything can break in one day. Mm-hmm. And they do a lot of times in a presidential race. Somebody, it'll break, and 2 weeks later, people vote different.
Yep. I know. Well, we've got Jason Sikora here with us, and I know you've been trying to jump in and ask some questions.
Yeah, I didn't know if Jason was supposed to be in, but that's why I kept looking at you.
Well,
going, Jason, fire away, bro.
I keep my microphone
notes,
down, yeah. But yeah, I took a few notes.
I said Jason could fire away, bro.
I'm going to work backwards. I only have a few questions.
Yeah.
But one of them was going to be what makes you so passionate about politics and the economy and government. But I think you answered that super, super well already. You totally get fired up, and I think that you see the problems, and you bring
yeah, but
that.
You know what? You know what? Rather, people have accused me of being negative. Okay, there's not a negative bone in my body, but they're not reading me right. And this is the example I came up with. Let's say any one of us went to the doctor and they found 5 spots on your liver, they're spots, but every part of your body's fine. Would you want to ignore it and just talk about the good stuff? Hey, look, my hair's fine, my bloodline, I can eat, I'm healthy, I'm going to blah, blah, blah. Or would you want them to fix the problem? Well, don't fix the problem, you come back in a year and that sucker's eating up your liver and moving through another part of your screen. Why? Mm-hmm. Because you didn't address it. I think we have political cancer in Louisiana. We've let it eat us up, and now it's hard to get rid of it. Okay? We didn't address all these problems. I'll give you an example. We got a $14.6 billion backlog in roads. Jan, I'm sure you heard the number. I'm sure you heard it too. Mm-hmm. How did we get to 14.6? Why didn't we bicker when it was 1 billion? Why didn't we say, guys, here's what we need to do? Because we didn't, because it wasn't a priority. So we let the roads get out of whack. Now we got to have a 20-cent gas tax. Well, that's not fair to the poor person. It's not fair to the middle-class guy. That's a lot of money coming out of your pocket. Especially in our state where we make $7,000 less than the national average. So you see what we did? We let the unfunded accrued liability in our retirement system. $22 billion in a hole. That is a nightmare getting ready to blow up in our face. Mike Foster came in, Jan. I know you remember Mike. Been, you weren't there. Were you in the election?
Yeah. Okay. No, I mean, I worked.
Went back in the election. You told me in the 80s you were there. Foster came in 95.
Yeah.
Well, Mike Foster said, okay, we're going to get this unfunded accrued liability straight. They passed the bill. They're going to put an extra $50 million and start adding more money to it. And that was back in 95, 96, 97, somewhere in there. Well, this is 2019. They never did it. So now instead of it being a little $7 or $8 billion problem, it's $22 billion. We didn't fix it because people bickered about it. And I was one of the ones that came along and talked about it. You know, I remember when they were saying the road problem, we got a $5 billion budget problem with the roads. And I started saying, why don't we fix it?
Because we're the priority. A small problem.
You know, so when I'm doing it, I get passionate about it because I'm hearing the rhetoric from Republicans and Democrats. But when they get there, it's like the guy I had on the day. When they get there, what did you do to fix it? And none of them can answer that.
Well, and I love your the medical analogy to that because it really... It makes sense.
Yeah, and I'm not saying that, and like I told you, people say, okay, let me get to one more step on that. You're negative. We have offered solutions over and over again till you blew it in the face. Nobody takes them. Then they say, we don't have an offered solution. No, you never take them. CB for Gosden, the late CB for Gosden, used to have a solution. They put it on paper, everything to do to straighten the state. Nobody's tried to fix anything. And that bothers me that we won't try. Instead, shoot the messenger. Mm-hmm. The bad guy on the ass talking bad about Joe. I'm not really talking bad about Joe personally. I'm talking about when a guy called today, the senator, I call him Milquetoast. Milquetoast came on my program plenty of times before he got elected. I'm tired of the good old boy network. I'm going to do this and do that. And he didn't do a lot of it. But yet he's mad at me because I challenged him on his voting record. The only thing I can really challenge these guys on is a voting record or leadership. Mm-hmm. We mentioned John O'Leary earlier. Yeah. Been there 48 years. He's been the man. They call him the kingmaker. They call him the magician. They call him the grown-up in the room. One guy called him the good shepherd. If you all that, how do we get a backlog in the roads? Mm-hmm. How do we get unfunded accrued liability? Mm-hmm. Okay, he's the guy. I mean, he's the man now. And they elect him Senate president. And I keep going, why are we 49th or 50th in education? And you just go through all the list. But guess what? They naming a new building after him, a new baseball park after him, the John Ilario Baseball Park. He designed it. He got the money for it. And so the mayor goes, we want to name it after him. And he says all these things he did. So my question when they did this piece the other day with John Ilario in a newspaper, it was this big, all that. They said one person that was negative on him, me. Made me look real good. But the point is, I just asked the question, what did you do for the hole in Louisiana? Not what did you do for West Wego. West Wego used to have 11,000 people. Now it's 8,000. They lost 3,000 people. But the mayor's bragging that John Ilario brought hundreds and hundreds of millions to West Wego. Well, there ain't nobody there. Why are we bringing 100 million? But I'm the bad guy because I brought it up.
Yep.
And well, that's my frustration. It's that people get mad at me, and sometimes I understand it. But the flip side, I go, why don't we change and do better?
Yeah. Well, I mean, being a radio talk show host, talking politics, people are going to be upset. So
if you say the grass is green, you're going to make somebody mad.
Yeah, exactly. So I want to turn a little bit towards broadcasting in general. Obviously, I have I enjoy it, and I built this room based on kind of my affinity for that.
Well, you got a radio voice.
Thank you.
When you want a program?
Maybe.
I don't remember. You and Jan can come do it, and they kick me off, and we good to go. I sell advertising, y'all be on there.
All right, good deal. All right, Jan, let's do that. So when you go in every day, do you have a day plan that you've written out? Like a show,
for what now?
Like a show plan for you?
Oh, yeah, every day. I got notebooks. I've kept almost all of them. I threw a few away that it's just an outline of what I'm doing that day.
Okay.
And when I do all my show prep from that night, that morning I'm at the office an hour and a half, 2 hours before prepping again. And I prep during the show. I mean, I have literally walked on the program and all this stuff that I had lined up, something broke.
Mm-hmm.
And it's something I may have knew about. And I changed my direction right then because it was something I thought was more important at the time.
Interesting.
And as far as guests, 98% of my guests call me. In other words, I don't really call and get guests. I never have.
You had on.
I don't mean that from a cocky perspective. Right. Not at all. What I'm saying is, when people want to come on, mm-hmm. I'll put them on whether they agree or disagree with me. That's the funny thing. Just like with the senator this morning,
Senator Cassidy.
Yeah, Senator Cassidy. That was them calling me wanting on on the airtime.
So that wasn't planned.
No, ma'am. That way was planned because they called me 3 days ago,
mm-hmm.
but it wasn't planned by me.
Right.
If I have the time, I give all of them. They could be Democrat, Republican. They could hate my. If John Ilario, who I'm not a big fan of, would call me and say, I want to be on your program tomorrow. I'm coming to the studio. Can I sit 2 hours with you? I'm going to wipe everything out and say, let's go.
Yeah.
Because this is the interview I want. Okay. And I don't mean that as in I'm going to beat you. I mean this in I got a lot of questions.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not saying we don't hustle any, but we don't hustle many. Like Governor Bill Edwards came on my program several times before he got elected. We gave an invitation to him for the first 3 years. We'll come to the mansion and put him and Jay Darden on that side, and I will sit here and we'll go head to head on my program, and y'all can we can have it'd be good entertainment, it'd be good knowledge. I'm probably getting ready to get my rear end handed to me, but I was okay with that. The fact of the matter is I feel confident enough that I know enough to be able to hang with them. I didn't say beat them or embarrass them, just kind of hang with them. And they never took the offer.
Well,
even today.
What are you going
to
do?
If the governor calls me today, I probably won't go to the mansion because it's election year. But that microphone's open for him. And I'll tell you, I'll make you a deal. If he's losing, I'll get a call to be on the program. If he thinks he's going to win, he'll never call me.
Well, you've got that statewide audience.
But, you know, this... you mentioned about the program earlier. It grew because I had a vision, but it was, you talk about hard to go get radio stations.
Yeah, I can imagine, yeah.
Coming out of Monroe, Louisiana?
On AM radio.
On AM radio, they would all tell me, great idea, yeah, there's some potential. They'd hug me, pat me on the back, and out I went. I never hear from them.
Well, so that leads me to my final question, and it's kind of more for me. What advice would you have for somebody who wants to be a radio host and or a radio producer?
I would definitely go to all the radio stations I possibly could go to. I'd have a resume. I'd tell them what you want to do. Like in my case, Brandon Como has been my best producer. I've had a lot of them. Brandon's been the mm-hmm. best. He was given to me by Mike Grimsley because I was coming to a radio program. He said, this is the guy I think would fit in good with you. Go apply. I know it sounds silly, but that's all I did when I got the program. Number two, as far as doing a program, if I had to do it all over again, this is what I would do. You're not going to like what I'm going to tell you.
Okay.
I would start on a weekend, and I would start on a Saturday morning if I could. And the reason I'm telling you that is people do listen Saturday morning. But after that, it's I don't think it's listened to as well.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I would do. Now, you may have to buy the time. I had to buy the time.
Right.
And the reason I'm saying start there is because I've seen weekend people move during the week everywhere in the country. You got to have a starting point. I happened to be in a situation where Bob Holliday wanted to make some money, and he was willing to sell it. Every radio station won't do that. But if you're willing to put your money out there, find you some friends, people in business that are willing to support it for the first 6 months, a year, till you can get on your feet and get to running. That's what I had to do. And I was fortunate I could start during the week. But if I had to do it again, I could have syndicated my program. It took me 3-4 years to get one station. 3 years.
Wow.
It took me. I would have been better looking back. Remember, I told you I had no experience,
Right.
You talk about no experience. Try to syndicate and have no experience. The best thing would have been for me to go back and say, you know what? I'm going to try to do a Saturday program and get these stations to take me. I probably would have had better luck.
Interesting.
Trying to syndicate it. Because during the week, if they're happy with the program, they're not going to just give you time. And you have no experience,
mm-hmm.
and you hadn't been on the air. You get my drift?
Yep.
When I walked in, Bob thought, yeah, it's a great idea. You're going to pay me, and I'm only going to give you once a week. And they guaranteed me 4 shows. That was it.
Right.
He didn't say, here's a 2-year contract. He said, I'll give you 4 programs. And, you know, it depends on where you want to go and what you want to do. I'm still not where I need to be. I got one more move I'd like to make, and I'm going to see if it comes true. And I'm working toward that. I'm 58. If I can do this 10 to 12 more years, that means I'm healthy.
Right.
And that's a blessing.
Yep.
That would be a blessing.
Yep.
So, but it is hard. You're going to hear no's. Can you handle no and keep going? Because I had to handle a lot of no's when I heard syndication. I was fortunate. If you went to Monroe right now, if Jan or you went to Monroe right now and told Bob I'll buy some time, Bob would probably sell it. He would probably sell something. Because he's in Monroe, not as good of economy, he would make that money.
Mm-hmm.
That's kind of what he did with me, because I kept growing every time there was an opening. He said, I'll take your money. Now, that's not a cut on Bob. Bob's a businessman. He's trying to make money.
Yep.
Right.
So it does cost to be on the weekends, but it's the quickest way to get in with a station, and they may be going, hey, man, you hear the guy Saturday morning or Sunday morning or whatever, or the lady, and we like her. Then all of a sudden, you're subbing for me, or you're subbing for one of the other programs.
Opens up the doors.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Jan could do my program.
All right, Jan.
Y'all could both walk in and do my program.
We're doing this, Jan. Let's make this happen. Well, thank you for being here. This has been a great podcast. And Jan, thank you again for letting me ask some questions.
Thank you, Jason, for taping us. And I probably could do your program. It would be a totally different approach. And that's people.
No, that's not true. Brandon did the program for the first time. Yesterday.
Yeah,
I had a doctor's appointment with my son's shoulder. He had surgery. So everybody think I went fishing. I didn't. I ain't even went on vacation yet. Don't know if I am. But I left and he did it for the first time. I've been begging him to do it. And he finally did it. I've had people come off the street, never even saw a radio show. It doesn't matter. What I believe is you do your own program.
Mm-hmm.
When you say something that our audience don't like, you're going to get your butt ripped off, especially if they mind. And I was totally opposite of what you said. I've seen it happen.
Right. Oh, but I know it would.
But on the flip side, people don't mind hearing somebody new. I'm just telling you, it's good for me to get off the air.
Well, I know when I listen to you, Moon, I want to go find out more. You know, I want to say, well, wait a minute. I want to research this. So I think,
Jan, I encourage you to do it, because you know what? I just told you, I'm not always right. But when I give you information, I'm sticking with it till you can prove me wrong.
And I think what I learn is, it's so easy to be complacent and not really know what's going on. And then, like we talked about, then people end up not voting.
No doubt.
You know,
well, I think you're getting ready to see one of the ugliest races you've ever seen. I think the confusion is going to be out there this time.
Yep. It's going to be a big year this year and next year.
But next year you go right into the presidential. We got a United States Senate race, too, Cassidy. Don't know who's going to go against him. I don't know if the Democrats are going to try to throw somebody against him or not. I don't know if they're going to waste money. Mm-hmm. But you like Bill or not, it's not even a point. It's a red state, and especially nationally, we vote red big time.
Yeah, he's a terror guy, huh?
Who?
He's a Terra guy.
What you mean?
Bill Cassidy. He graduated from Terra High.
Yeah, that's right. He's a Baton Rouge guy, too.
Another Baton Rouge guy. Well, Moon Griffon, thank you so much.
I enjoyed every second.
Oh, I enjoyed it, too. I wanted people to have the opportunity to hear you talk about what drives you. And I'm just grateful you came on the show.
I got to tell you, the good Lord gave me a vision. And I say that sincerely. He kind of gave me the vision and kept driving me to go. I'm sure the good Lord shakes his head at me a lot.
But we know he's there.
Because God knows I do.
Yeah. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you, ma'am. Thank you,
and
ma'am.
And thank you to everyone that listens. I want to thank Raider Solutions, Iberia Bank, and Lafayette General also for its support. On behalf of Discover Lafayette, this is Jan Swift.